The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires. Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. I'm Dougie Rankin and I'm joined today by...
Niall Barker, long time no see.
Yeah, long time no see, Niall. It was so long ago, and the last time I saw you, you have got yourself a new lorry.
Well, I technically didn't get myself the new lorry. The lorry was gifted to me to use. But yes, I have given the version 4 to her next caretaker.
Right, so yeah, the one that you had before, you had a Volvo V4, was that a 500?
Yeah, she was a 68 plate 500. She's still on fleet. There's a new recruit driving it at the minute, and she's still being looked after, which is nice.
What was it, a Globetrotter or an XL?
Just a Globetrotter on that one.
Right, standard 500. Yeah. I would be in a 68 plate, yeah. What midlift or tag?
It was a midlift, that one.
So what have you got now?
Version 5. 540 tag axle Globetrotter XL.
Nice, that's a very desirable spec of lorry, that is.
Very much.
So it being a V5, it's quite different on the inside. You've got your dual digital screens now.
Yeah, they took a little bit of getting used to, but then once you take them in and have a play about with them and work out what things do, it's not so bad. I mean, you know, you can have the sat-nav on the dashboard screen, or you can have it where it's basically an analog speedo, but on a digital screen. I usually keep it on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of different options. That I like the facility that it's got where it tells you all your tachograph and driving times, because it breaks it down really comprehensively with all the information. So it tells you everything that you've done, but it also tells you everything that you can do going forward. So you really can't go wrong. It tells you exactly how many reduced daily rests you've got left. And it also tells you over the sort of, the 3-week spread with your 90 hours. And I thought that's super handy, that, because with the older systems, you could sometimes, if you weren't keeping track of it as closely as you could be wondering, how much time exactly do I have for next week? Well, is the tachograph suddenly going to start flashing up at me, telling me I'm running out of time on a Friday?
Yeah, I've had that before when they say I've done a full week at it, and it's can you run up the road for me Sunday afternoon? Yes. Yeah, no bother. You get in the lorry Sunday afternoon, you think, oh, hang on, I've only got 3 hours left. I can't do this.
Yeah. I got it last Friday when I took my last 45 to get up the road, and I was thinking, right, that's going to flip on another 4.5 hours, and it came up 3:13, and I was like, what? Why is it doing that? And of course, it was because I'd run out of, I could only run a 13-hour day with it. And I was like, I don't know how I'd manage that exactly. But I was like, oh. So I ended up 5 minutes over coming into the yard. So I was like, great. I hope in the off chance I get stopped, I hope they don't take exception to that. But I'm like, what do you want me to do? Have a night out in the street round the corner for the yard?
Yeah, well, there is a thing as well. Say if it's a Friday afternoon, you can slightly sneak over, but then that's only exceptional circumstances, isn't it?
Not going to happen very often. How do you find the difference between the Globetrotter and the Globetrotter XL? Was that, have you got rear lockers and all that?
Yeah, one thing I have noticed, I've got rear lockers rather than a top bunk. The lockers are the same size on an XL, they're just further above your head, which means you don't bang your head when you get up in the morning, which is a nice thing. I didn't mind the Globetrotter. It was nice, it was cozy, it had enough room in it, but then the XL get that little bit of extra headroom. If you're sat up in bed, it doesn't feel like the lockers are that close to you.
So was it brand new?
Yeah, it was brand new. We got it in October. It turned up the Friday before Newark.
Oh, happy days. So how are you getting on? Because obviously the 540s are completely different engine setup to the 500. It's not just like a remap. It's got different intercooler, radiator, and loads of other ancillaries are different on it. How are you finding it performance and economy wise compared to the 500? Because you do a fair bit of, you do all sorts of stuff, don't you? You've got a big variety of places you go and stuff that you carry.
Yeah, we do anything and everything. I mean, the reason why my one's a tag axle is because we do we've got flatbeds that have got the side pins in them for doing timber. So, you know, we have the tag axle for that because it's doable with a midlift, but it's just a whole hell of a lot easier with a tag some of the places we go. Then that being said, we've got two version fives now. We've got a midlift and then my one. And my one's, yeah, that one's a 22 or, yeah, that one's a 22 plate V5. And then my one's my one's brand new. Mine's like it's like the aero spec, but it's not got the aero cab. It's still a standard front end. Then I think mine's a mile to the gallon better off than that one.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't. Yeah. And then, you know, that was a 540 as well. It's on the same work, does the same distance. So
Can't think it has really changed during that time. Maybe the hub had a, okay, because you got Euro 6C was 2017, then we went D and then E. I'm not sure if we were on F yet, whether you've got a Euro 6F or the, which is probably the final iteration before we move to Euro 7 in 2 years' time, where there's going to be a lot of stuff happening around Euro 7 with manufacturers and engines coming in and changing stuff. But yeah, if you look at it, what MPG are you getting on average?
On a heavy week, do high eights, low nines, maybe.
That's good, like on a pretty good and heavy.
Yeah, because like we're, you know, if I'm drawing timber back, like it's mainly out of the southeast that we draw from, and it's, you know, I'm heavy down, and obviously it's, you know, max weight back, so there's not really a lot of light running in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty good, like, because it could be quite easily down in the sevens with that, with a lot of trucks there.
Yeah, and then say like some places you're coming out of, like I went to one spot a couple of weeks back, and you turn out of the forest and you're straight up like a 10% gradient hill from the get go, and like you have to like lock it in gear and just give it to get to the top of the hill, because if you stop halfway up, you won't get going again.
Yeah.
There's a lot of places where you draw out of the forest, and like you're a good hour down a single track road before you get back to anywhere where you can actually put the cruise control on.
Mm.
Which the 4 hours running in that you've got your MPG up, that hour back to the main road, that can nail it. So,
yeah, there's nothing you can do about it, really. No, just it is what it is. I think I'd said in the podcast I was doing the other week, yeah, Volvo are on a bit of a purple patch at the moment with everything that they've got on the go, with them having released the Aero and the 780 and the success of the turbo compound engines, which are becoming increasingly popular in a lot of fleets, and you're hearing guys and jobs getting sort of consistent 13s and 14s on certain work, which is just bonkers, really. Like,
yeah,
how many kilometers have you got in it now?
When I got it, it had 600 kilometers on it, and this last week I think 83,000 since October. So
how's your steering wheel surviving? Because I mean, you would have got it, it would have been like this immaculate soft grey leather.
I'm trying not to do the thing where you hold it in the same place all the time, just wear a corner out of it.
Yeah, because I was looking at some steering wheels and trucks, like quite new ones sort of recently, and I'm like, how do the steering wheels get that bad that quickly? What is it that people are doing to them? I can only guess is it like dirty, like really rough hands or something? Because I'm like, steering wheels just, lorry steering wheels for many years didn't really have leather on them as much. Now pretty much everything, well, a large percentage of them have got leather on them. And I'm like, how does it go downhill so fast? I think a lot of people clean them with baby wipes and those antibacterial wipes, and I've heard that that's bad for them. That for some reason the leather doesn't really like baby wipes for some reason, and I'm like, I don't know, but you wouldn't have thought that it would, because like baby wipes are designed for, you know, babies, and that there wouldn't be anything, you know, acidic or something that would hurt leather. So I don't know.
Well, there's got to be something in baby wipes because they're best thing to get fifth wheel grease off, aren't they? So
yeah, they work a treat on that. They work really well on steering wheels. I've stopped using them on leather wheels because I heard that. I'm like, I don't know if it's true or not.
I think a lot of it is like getting in the truck with dirty hands because, like, say all you got to do is hook a trailer up and you've got like a hole in the. In like the corner of your glove, and then that's all it takes to get the dirt on it, and then you're putting that dirt under the steering wheel and it just sits in it. And like every time I get back in the truck, the gloves go in the locker, and you know, I clean my hands best I can, so I'm not putting that on the steering wheel. I mean, it's holding up all right, but then you know it's only 6 months old. It's not
I saw one the other day that was like 6 months old, and it was a Scania steering wheel, shiny black. Like, it looked like it had done like 300,000-400,000, and I'm like, how have you managed to get it like that so quickly? But that's just one of my things. I've just been monitoring and looking at now. It's kind of fascinating me as to how quickly some steering wheels go downhill. Because if you've got a plastic one, then it really doesn't matter. They'll like last for ages, but it seems that leather is the preferred option on the way forward, even on stuff that are quite construction orientated.
Yeah, well, thing a lot of them are starting to do now as they age on. If you clean them enough, all the plastic starts coming off of the dash switches, so you don't know what anything does anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to watch for that. Well, you won't have in a lot of cases now because of all the digital screens that are in everything, with moving everything onto screens. With only the very most essential functions on buttons. Because I was speaking about, you know, the Scania Smart Dash continues to, Scania are still busy software updating all the time to get that sorted out because it does some unusual things like put your radio on full blast at 2 o'clock in the morning or just black itself out and not allow you access to anything while the heater controls are on full. But modern technology, it's on the way now. Bob Beach is a well-known contributor to the magazine, does a lot of work with Broughton Transport. He was there this weekend. Broughton have just taken on a batch of these controversial new Mercedes-Benz with the Pro Cabin.
I've been reading up on that, yeah. It's a popular conversation, that one.
Yeah. The thing is, if you look at the Broughton ones, you find them online. Once you see them hooked into a trailer with a livery on them, they're nowhere near as controversial as what the first look at them was when it was just the tractor unit on its own in plain white and people were losing their minds on it. It looks surprisingly conventional. And there's a lot of opportunity with the big flat area on the front to do stuff with the livery on them, and I've kind of, such has been the degree of pant wetting and keyboard warrior excitement over them, I'm like, no, you know what, they're actually cool. Fair play to Mercedes for going bonkers and going full out with it and designing that truck, because the Broughton ones have got the 630 horsepower turbo compound diesel engine in them, and although those ones don't have it, you can have that truck with conventional mirrors on it. And it's in a massive upgrade to the interior as well. The trim's better quality. It's got a phenomenal bunk, driver's seat. The interfaces have been improved. The driver's seat has been lowered substantially. And I was thinking, yeah, that is fair play to them for doing something so bonkers and so unusual. And the fact is with people coming on and putting their own liveries on them and putting their own mark on them, putting, you know, accessories, I think they'll work out quite nicely and blend in. And maybe surprisingly, it'll allow Mercedes to recover some of the position that they once had because they've kind of fallen by the wayside in recent times. And of course, if you just don't fancy it at all, you can still order the conventional, the standard fronted Actros if you want it. But yeah, I know it was designed originally as an electric truck, but I think it looks pretty cool as a diesel one. So it's become so controversial that it is in fact cool.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know you could still get them with a standard grille on, but then have you seen the, I think it's a Dutch one, the orange one that's got the stickers on the front to make it look like an SK front end?
No. Yeah, well, is it one of the aerodynamic Pro Cabin ones?
Yeah, like the flat fronted one without a grill, so to speak. And
right,
I think there's a couple of them that have done it now. They've, you know, done them, painting them up, and they've put like the foot stickers on the front to make it kind of look like either an MP1 or an SK front grill, and they do look kind of cool. And then one thing a friend of mine pointed out to me, it's like, say if you got one and you've like screwed ADR boards to the front of it, and it's like, well, if you sell the truck and take them off, your front end's going to be full of holes.
Oh, right enough. You're right, you get magnetic ones, I suppose. If it's metal, they're right enough, I suppose. You would have to go and find a metal-y sort of bit. No, I'm looking through a Google image search on them now, and it's all the plain white. Yeah, that the plain white truck. Yeah, it just doesn't look right at all. But it's amazing what a bit of colour and a few accessories can do to something to completely transform it. But crucially, the important thing is they drive much better as well, which is an important thing, because the Actros had kind of lagged behind and sort of the way that the quality of driving, the experience in terms of like the gearbox, that's been revamped. The chassis has been revamped, and both of them are really good to drive. And yeah, they'll appeal to some drivers as well who like to have something just that bit different from the norm, you know. Right, if you got offered, you know, a Scania or a Volvo of a certain specification, and you could get the Mercedes with quite a bit higher specification, and it's something that really stands out, it's going to be a talking point. So it might well tempt people. And besides that, the operators that are going to buy them are not going to be buying them on the strength of what somebody on the internet thinks anyway. It'll be the overall package. As to whether or not they will be a success.
It's almost like this happens every time a new truck comes out.
Yeah, it does.
When the current shape Volvos first come out, it was like, oh, they're terrible. Oh, and actually, yeah. No, they look quite cool with the livery on. Give it a year or so, and it's like, ah, they're brilliant, these. Same when the Scanias come out, same when the S-Ways come out, and it's like, yeah, history does repeat itself.
Yeah, with the Scania next gen, some people are like, oh, they've really messed up here. This is going to be a disaster for them. Yeah. See how that worked out. Like there aren't like they can't. They don't sell every single next gen that they can build at an inflated price. But again, the first pictures of them were when they were all in plain white, and of course, everything's got to look like something else as well. It looks like a DAF. It looks like this. It looks like that. At least you can't accuse the Merc of looking like anything else.
Well, you can make anything look ugly. I mean, many things look terrible in plain white. Once they've got a bit of colour on them, they start getting noticed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's exciting developments for the Iveco S-Way, because, of course, we've got the new range is hitting the roads now with the 580 engine, new gearbox and all that. But up in Scotland, AM Phillip have now sold the first tag axle S-Way, which has gone into a company in Forfar. AM Phillip are the Iveco dealer up in the north of, well, not really the north of Scotland, they're up by Dundee at Forfar, but they're pretty successful up there. And of course, you've never been able to get a tag axle S-Way. Probably about half the trucks up in that part of the world are tags. So AM Phillip took it on themselves to go and work closely with a conversion company and Iveco Europe as well to get the go-ahead. And they have taken a 6x2 rigid and got it shortened with a single tag on it. And they're going to see what these early examples do, see what interest in them, to see how much of a success they will be. And we'll be featuring that quite soon, because Phillips are advertising a brand new S-Way with everything on it, mirrors, not mirror cams, £115,000 for the new 580, and that's like a 5 years warranty on it as well. And that's going to be seriously tempting to a lot of hauliers when you consider the price of a lot of rival trucks. There was a Scania V8 with 500,000 kilometres on it for sale just this week as well for the same price. Well, with the price of everything going through the roof, including your groceries and all that, that's going to tempt quite a lot of people.
Yeah, I seen that S-Way. It's a rear steer as well, which I seen this morning. I thought that could be quite desirable for the right person on the right work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like you, I mean, I'm driving a Tag now as well. Just to, if anybody's not listened to the previous episode, I'm now back out driving full time again. That's a month I've been on the road, and I've been working with Rocksoft Gravel. I did love the milk tanker work. I do really like the milk tanker work at Shuttleworth, but it's just logistics. It's too far away for me, and Rocksoft are 10 minutes along the road. And I've got my own lorry. Nobody else drives it at the weekend, which is always nice if you've not got, you know, people going out and mucking about and making things dirty and all that. So, yeah, I've got my 2020 R540 Tag, and yeah, I've always been of the opinion, yeah, I can get by with a midlift. You can get by with a midlift. But just having the Tag over the past month, I'm now like, I don't want a cut. I wouldn't want to swap it for a midlift with some of the places that we go.
Yeah, we're the same.
Because it just makes life easier when you're backing in places and you can get it in first time.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is the first time I've ever driven a Tag, and it's the, well, first wagon I've had that's had front air, first one on supers, first Tag axle. When I got in it Monday morning the first time, I couldn't keep it in a straight line. And it's got dynamic steering as well, so that you know, trying to steer it, like, you know, the first corner I come to, I nearly end up going back the opposite way. It turned that quick. And then I took one of our midlifts out last Friday, and I only took it next door, got loaded, come back, and trying to back it into a space, you'd think I'd never reversed a trailer before. And it's like, why is this not turning?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the Tag, it makes it so easy to just make those adjustments while you're reversing, even if you're like made a bit of an arse of it and you're not lined up right. It's just not, just you just send it back around and line it up again. Yeah, I could see how people get very, very used to having that extra maneuverability. Yeah, it's a bit noddy, and it doesn't, like, if you're cornering as well, it kind of wants to pitch down on the front corner because of the shorter fuel base. But you do get used to that. The comfort isn't quite there as much.
Yeah, I kind of get why people run with the Tag axle down when they're empty, because same as you say, they when you're trying to thrip down back rows, trying to get on, they do nod, especially with air on the front. I mean, when it's fully loaded, you know, and it's heavy, you know, it rides like a cruise ship. Can't fault it there. It's just, then I suppose, yeah, with like the nodding when it's empty, that's just Tag axle problems.
Yeah, it's something that you ultimately get used to. But I'll be getting a demo unit or two on soon, and I would imagine they'll probably be midlifts. So I'll be curious to see as to how much I've retuned my driving to a Tag axle. So I've been very much enjoying the fact that the Scania's got normal mirrors on it as well. Because I'd still just rather have them compared to the mirror cams, which I can get by with, I can manage, but there's just no. Long live mirrors. Let's keep mirrors going for a good old long time. But I've been super. Have you been out to any shows yet this year?
Yeah, I went to Lincoln. I took the ERF, and my brother quite kindly brought the work lorry down with him. So when, along with five others from work, so we had a bit of a display on. Yeah, that were a good weekend. And next one is, I think, start of June. That'll be Tractorfest at Newby Hall, and I'll just be taking the ERF on its own there.
Right, there was Kelsall as well in June.
Yes, I'm going to that one. I got my passes through last week.
Yeah, I'm going to go to that. I'm not taking a lorry or anything. I'm just going in person. But I think I'll try and do both days because there's so much to get round. Because we've got RTX on the following week, so I'll be working at RTX for the magazine there during the week. But I've got a photo shoot on in the Monday as well for my British Truck Special. Which is coming up in October. The British Truck Special's finally in. But we've got John, that green Foden, the New Zealand spec, 4000. Yeah, we've got that, and his Fleetmaster. That's getting photographed on the Monday after Kelsall, which is handy because I'm already down the road. So I'll go down the road for Kelsall for the weekend, and then I will go to RTX for the week. That's the first time I'm taking off from driving between now and then. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, Kelsall's always been a good show. I think this will be third time I've been.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of variety, between new and old trucks, and it's just the sheer weird variety of old trucks as well, it's great. I mean, even if you'd want to take the kids for a day out as well, they've got like giant tortoises and classic cars and all sorts of random stuff at it. I really like it. So, yeah, I went last year, but it was just for a day and I was just rushing around it. I wasn't able to enjoy it as much as I should have done. So I am going to go for both the days this year. And hopefully it'll be sunny and we will enjoy it.
Yeah, that's one thing we could say about Lincoln this time around. At least the weather was half decent.
Yeah, the ground was solid. Yes, I had to do Lincoln in one day, so I didn't see various bits of it. But we did get round a good old bit of it. Did enjoy it. It looks good. It looks like Lincoln is settling in nicely. Just the vastness of it, you know, it's just, you wouldn't have thought something could have been that much bigger than Peterborough, but it is. It just goes on forever, really. And if you want to get round the whole thing, yeah, I would definitely recommend you, yeah, taking 2 days to go and do it, potentially even three.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realise how big Lincoln Ground was. I mean, well, I was there for the full 4 days. I got there at Friday afternoon, and I still didn't manage to round it.
Mm. It's something else. And yeah, we've got a lot of good stuff to follow up on for features in the magazine as well. I was very, very happy about what we'd managed to get out of that. I'm pondering, there's Truckfest Northeast, which I went to last year. I actually ended up working it because Kevin, who's editor of Transport News, couldn't go, so I went to it. But I might potentially try and go to that in a couple of weeks because I could probably take my lorry, which occurred to me. So I was like, here, wait a minute, I could take my lorry to a show here. And it would be straightforward enough, I think, to go and get loaded on the Friday. Because a lot of the stuff goes down to the northeast anyway, so I should probably be able to go and do that. How are you finding life on the road in terms of traffic at the moment and getting parked up at night and things like that? Do you usually do the truck stop thing, or do you mix it up? Are you away all week, or do you do some nights at home?
Do odd couple of nights at home. I mean, last month I think I did a full week away last month, which is only the third time I've had to do a full week away since I've started tramping, which I suppose isn't bad. But we've got the Snap account and everything, so it's, you know, if you know a decent place, then you know the some of them you can ring up and book, which is kind of handy. And then But then there's other, like, say, if I know like a little hiding spot that I know I won't get bothered in, I'd prefer the hiding spot than when we've had that warm spell. It's like I rolled into Toddington Services, and it's, you know, there's all waggies there. They're all running. There's fridges there, and it's like, I know a little secret place about 10 minutes down the road. I'm going to grab some food here, and then I'm going to go park there by myself.
Yeah, because you get the heat radiating out of all the lorries as well. Even if they're parked up and the engine's off, the heat's still soaking out of them, and it can get super hot. You know, and if you don't have like nighttime aircon, which is about the only thing I think my lorry doesn't have. It's got every other option ticked, but it doesn't have night air park or iPark cool, as it would be called in your Volvo.
Mine's got it. I haven't used it at night yet, because like I say, if I'm parked at night and there's a bit of a breeze going, I prefer the windows down, mm-hmm. It's just a bit fresher. But then say if we're on site getting loaded, I don't have to have the windows down for the airflow. I can have the windows up, so then it doesn't get all the dust and the crap in the cab. Because I've heard stories of people leaving the aircon on overnight and then waking up to flat batteries, and I'm a bit skeptical about having flat batteries.
Yeah, you'd think the thing would monitor that and switch it off if it thought there was any sort of chance that it might not be able to start. But yeah, you're not that. I've heard somebody else mention that to me as well about flat batteries and lorries running the nighttime aircon. When I was on the milk tankers, I never parked on a truck stop once. All the locations I seem to go to. Of course, it is a tanker as well, so there's no chance of my load being stolen. There was never an issue with that. So I always seemed to end up parked, you know, just in We try to find the best sort of hidey places and lay, good high five-star lay-bys and all that. But with on the new job, I've got a curtain cider on, and the curtain ciders are beautiful, like immaculate yellow curtains, never been cut or anything. So I thought, well, no, I don't really want to be parking somewhere random. So I've done a couple of nights in Carnforth, which was fine. I've stopped in there a couple of times for a shower, which is £2.50. Is what it is. You can get a shower for free at T-Bay, which has got an immaculate shower, I've noticed. But I did a couple of nights in there. Gone to Gilder's truck stop at Evesham. I was in there, which is very nice. Where else have I been? Oh, I was at the Trucker's Rest in Cannock as well. Because you've got Watling Street and it's got the Hollies on it as well. But I ended up in the Trucker's Rest, which was perfectly nice one night as well. But oh, the last week, oh, there was some fun and games in the road last week. Anyway, yeah, I had a busy week. I did 40 hours driving, so it was like 8 hours a day over the 5 days, and I never went into a 10 once or anything, so it was very consistent. But on the Thursday, I'd got away from the yard ridiculously early in the morning, got to Troon for 6 o'clock in the morning to load. First into Troon, out at 7:15, an hour and 5 minutes to get across to the M74 on the A71. Got as far down as T-Bay and stopped for a break because I was heading to like near West Bromwich. And just as I was sitting in the cab, winding my time down, I noticed that the sat-nav started jumping up, and it was because that Jenkinson's walking floor had gone on fire at Preston. Did you see about that?
Yeah, I seen the picture of it with the fire come out. Out little top, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like the driver did well. He was able to drop the trailer and get the unit out from under it. So fair play to him. But it sounds like it was like full of rubbish, which would be like going to landfill. Don't quote me on that. But the thing is, with the heat of everything and the dryness of everything right now, there's a risk that something in that could self-ignite, I guess, which is presumably what it did. So the trailer was on fire because and then it said hour-long delays, 90-minute delays, 3 lanes out of 4 shut, motorway shut altogether while they recovered it. And there were people who were near the location said, look, they had the fire out for ages. There was no need for them to hold the thing up for as long as they did. I guess they must have been concerned about it reigniting or something. But it had to go on a magical mystery tour. I don't know. How are you with... What's your thoughts on, like, if you see on the motorway that it's all coming grinding to a halt? I know a lot of drivers do. But, you know, what is your thoughts in general? You see that happening, you look at the nav, you're like, oh no, we're screwed. Do you, A, pull off at an exit before the long, long queues of traffic and then try and work out a diversion route? Or do you drive into the back of it and just sit there and hope for the best?
Yeah, well, I try and keep it rolling.
If you've got the opportunity to keep going, you know, sometimes you do just get stuck in it.
I've had both experiences of it. I've had it before where, like, say, the M1's been shut and you just peel off and go along the A5 if it's like Milton Keynes area, then carry on that way. Or, say if it's like a Friday afternoon and the A66 is stuffed, you're coming back from like the top side, just go straight down the A1. But then I had one a bit back where the M11 was shut in front of me. So I got halfway down the 14, tried to go down towards Godmanchester, but then that way was screwed. So I got back on the M11 and it said it was rolling fine up to the closure. It's like, okay, we'll just go along this 120 and then back down the 12, jump on the 25 there. But then unbeknownst to me, something had happened like right before the closure. So I ended up getting stuck in that for 2 hours before I got to the initial closure. It's just one of them.
I've also had
it before where they've shut the motorway, so I've come off, sat in traffic around the diversion, but then by the time I've got back to the motorway, it's running again, and they've cleared whatever it was.
Yeah, sometimes you're always gambling. I'm one of those that I'm like frantically getting the map out and looking around to see. Well, you don't want to come off the junction right before where it's happened because you know that's going to be screwed, and you don't want to use the direct route that takes you past it because that's going to be screwed. Because I was looking at it going, well, if I go down to the 55 cutoff and try and go down through Preston, everybody's going to be trying to do that. So I was like, right, I'm going to come off at Garstang all the way down the A6 onto the M55, and then I turned to head towards Blackpool, came off the first junction, which there's a whole load of new road. It's like a bypass on the west side of Preston. It all looks brand new because my trucker's Atlas is like 2019. I really need to get a new one, and that road wasn't on it. So I came in right into the west side of Preston, and I thought, if I go right along the bottom side and then hit, try and aim for the M65, nah, that was the traffic, it caused that much carnage around the area that I got stuck in that for a good while. But I think it cost me 45 minutes in total. So it was still a lot better than driving into the queue and sitting at the back. A lot of steering wheel attendants, well, no matter what, like I've seen transport planners when I've been in at places interviewing people, and they're like, he's just driven straight into the back of that, you know, there's like, just stop oil, I've blocked the M25, and one of the drivers is just driven right into the back of it. Why would you do that? But I think that's where you sort of earn your wages there. That's like getting round stuff like that. So yeah, ultimately I got round it, but the timber place I was going to that I'd got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to try and get it tipped the same day, I would have got there between 2:30 and 3 and got it tipped, and I got there at 4 o'clock in the end when they were all going home. So, but I was first in the queue the next morning, and the guy was tipping it at 5:30 the following morning, so that was pretty good. But the place that I was, I don't know how many, where is the least desirable area you've encountered driving through in your lorry? Like, you're like, wow, this is like another world.
Anywhere in the southeast. Once you get below the 25, like down the A21, like anywhere that area, like Tunbridge Wells area, and it's all, you know, it's all narrow lanes. You know, you're taking the lives of your mirrors into your hands anytime you go down there.
Rural sort of stuff, like even little village town centres that have got like two right angled bends right in the middle of them. You're like a 90-degree corner with an endless stream of very posh traffic coming the other way, who are mortified that you would be there. And, you know, they're like, I drive down this road at 3 o'clock every day, and there's never usually a lorry here, so you're going to have to move.
Yeah, well, anytime somebody shouts at me for going the wrong way, I just roll the window down and say, well, tell me you've never made a mistake before.
Well, I'd come off the motorway at junction one of the M5 and turned into, it must be West Bromwich, because I passed West Bromwich Albion Stadium. And wow, that was like driving into another country. The driving was really something else. I thought Bradford was bad. This was on another level. Like, I was watching everything like a hawk. People like swinging U-turns right in front of us, leaving the back end of the car sitting half out in the street, and somebody's handing in like takeaway food so they can go and like take it away and deliver it or something. And yet people just trying to cut round the outside of you, going outside the traffic islands, and the barred up Mercedes Sprinter vans. And yeah, there was only like 3 or 4 miles, and the amount of rubbish piled up in the streets and the litter everywhere and people walking about in the traffic, I was like, I'd been told that I could park outside the place overnight, and I was like, and I had the fuel, there wasn't even anything showing on the fuel gauge, because I was like, I'm not parking here with any fuel in it overnight. But I got down there, there was like a little mini roundabout and kind of narrow, it was buildings either side and parked cars, and there was just a stream of cars coming through. There was no gaps, I just had to wait. Cars coming through. And then someday, there were obviously a couple of cars behind me, and then people beep. Somebody was like beeping the horn relentlessly. Beep, 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 beep. And I'm like, what is your problem, guy? Like, he must have obviously thought he was back in whatever it was he lived. So eventually, I managed to squeeze my way through, and the horn's still going. As I said, I guess down to the place eventually, and they're like, yeah, you can park here for the night. It's no problem. It's super quiet here. And fair play to them, in this little industrial estate it was, there was no noise anywhere all night. But they're like, yeah, there's a load of takeaways up there. Yeah, loads of them. You can go and get yourself some eat up there. And I was like, I'm not leaving this lorry. Curtains shut. But yeah, that part of Birmingham, that was like an eye-opener into, yeah, a different world. And I was glad to get out of there at the back of 6 in the morning before the traffic built up, because it was already getting a bit wild and wacky as I pulled back onto the M5 to head north again. But all good. All good fun. I'm still learning new places I need to go, and things that you need to know about all these places. Like, you have to get here at 6:30 in the morning because you need to reverse in off this super busy road in Manchester. And they were right enough. And as soon as I try to do anything, 100 cars appear from each direction, who are all furious about the fact a lorry's reversing in somewhere.
Yeah, there's a place that we go to, and it's in West London. You have to go around and come in off the M4. That's kind of like the best way in. It's Hammersmith, Wandsworth kind of area. And I went a couple of weeks back, and he gave me, and it's like, ah, just let me ring him, because I don't think Arctics can go in there. And we quick Googled it, and like a dickhead, I said, oh yeah, I've been there before. It's like, all right, right enough, on you go. It's like, well, that was a miscalculation on my part. And then, gets down there, and like getting into it, it's not too bad. Then, I rang the place on the way. It's like, yeah, I'm on my way. I've got this for you. It's like, are you in an Arctic? It's like, yeah. It's like, oh, lovely. It's like, yeah, you know the score. And it's, it's all right at 7 o'clock in the morning, but at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, when the place is absolutely chock full and you have to tip in the car park, it's a bit of a twat, if you'll pardon the pun. And then, so I rocked up to the place. They had a rigid in there tipping already. And then there was a foreign guy with a fridge tipping flowers with the cages. And he was just parked on the road outside. And then he buggered off. And they said to me, like, which way did he go? I says, he went that way. Like, does he know that there's a weak bridge if he goes that way? I says, well, he'll find out one way or another.
Well, it's a weaker bridge now.
Well, I never saw him come back the opposite direction, so he must have got all right. And then you have to back in off the road, and then, you know, it's same old story. You've got people hiking up on the curb, putting their car through the hedge to try and get round you, and then...
Just as the head of the unit's swinging round to straighten up, somebody's like up a curb in a Range Rover trying to get past because they can't wait an extra 5 seconds. The impatience is just...
Yeah, that's when the...
Something else.
That's when the old tag axle handling comes into its own, like, you know, in the city.
Yeah,
as well.
Because you don't want to be shunting. You want to be getting it in first time.
Yeah, and then... on the way in, it's like, you know, you come down in like the quote unquote main road, but then the place where we go is like one row of houses back. So it's like two right turns to get behind it. Then obviously on the way out, it's two left turns, and it's a mini roundabout with traffic islands on it. So you have to, and people park everywhere. So you have to hike it up over the traffic islands to get round. And somebody's quite kindly taken the bollards off the traffic islands. So now you've got more room to swing. And then it's, you know, it's one of them. You sat waiting to get out, and then there's a, you know, you're sat there with the indicator on, and it's shouting at you, going vehicle turning left, because, you know, it's you're in the DVS zone. Mm-hmm. You got somebody on a moped with the Deliveroo box coming up that side of you, wanting to turn right across the front of you when you're looking in the mirror trying to get around the corner, and you're like, are you trying to kill yourself?
Oh, yeah, that whole warning vehicle turning left thing, they just all ignore it. They don't care. It just blends in with the urban racket of what's going on. I'm glad he's got a couple of lorries which are London registered, and mine isn't one, thankfully. Like, hey, long may that continue.
Yeah, all of ours have got the DVS kit on it, and then we've got one 64 plate, and that's too old to go in, because it's, you know, even though it's Euro 6, it's like original Euro 6, so they won't let it in the clean air zone now.
And really?
Yeah, and apparently so. I haven't read up on it, but. That's what I hear, and a few people have told me that, and the guy isn't too in much in a hurry to get rid of it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be in a hurry to get rid of it either.
Yeah, I mean, we don't do a lot into London, but it's just like the odd time you think, friggin' hell, here we go again. Like, that's that's me done for the next 6 months. Send somebody else next time.
It's not easy. When people talk about automating lorries and things, it's like, you just do not understand the things that drivers go through and the complications with getting stuff into these places, which are never designed to take lorries anyway. There's quite a lot to it that people don't understand, that don't know about trucks. Yeah, I've found it. I've had a good few busy weeks, a good bit of variety on it, and it's quite satisfying at the end of the week when you look back and think, yeah, I got in and out of there, I got that done, I've been to all these places. Because I was in Devon this week before I was in Birmingham, and some of the roads in Devon, I mean, that is like a hard pull on a truck. I'm glad it's a 540 that I've got, which is quite a rare model, and I'm glad that I've got that little bit extra because it does need it when you're sitting at full weight a lot of the time. I can see why there's a lot of V8s in the southwest.
Yeah, you can usually tell, like another guy I know, he works all up north, and he's just got a new shape 660 Scania, and the whole fleet is big V8 Scanias, and it's like, you know,
then, yeah, they're not
like
toys.
We bring fish out of Scrabster, you know, and like the first 4 hours of the job isn't flat, and it isn't, you know, I mean, you know, you're sending, you know, Scrabster back down to Perth. It's not the easiest road.
Oh yeah. You need that extra bit of grunt to make life just that little bit easier. Aye. But a busy old week. I've noticed on the motorway. I've noticed kind of young lads in lorries, and I do wonder, some of these young guys, I don't know if they've been fast-tracked or what, or if they really don't, because I know there's a lot of great young drivers out there, but I'd like three encounters, one after the other, with some curious behaviour, and I'm wondering, I'm like, when you get in the lorry and you're driving it, do you just think, right, the lorry's going to do what it's going to do, and everybody else has to deal with what's going on, and I'm not going to influence it, you know, like just like maxing out over speeds. It was one of them. I'd overtaken a trunk motor, an Irish trunk motor, one of the slower ones, and I went past it. I think my lorry's doing maybe 56.1 or something. Because it goes well, and I don't often get overtaken, and it means I do overtake some trucks. So I do overtake quite a lot of trucks. But this guy, I got past him like sort of no problem, and then at the bit at Junction 23 where it goes off the smart motorway from four lanes down to three, I was rolling on down the hill quite the thing. I wasn't that heavy because I let my overspeeds run up to 60. Because you're legally allowed to do that anyway. The trucks are allowed to go 60 mile an hour. And here I look in the mirror, and here he comes. And he's like, whoosh, away. And he gets alongside me and just gets his cab past the front of mine. And then I'm like, what are you going to do now? Because he's obviously run out of speed. He's not going to get past me. So now he's just going to sit alongside me while I gently pull away from him again. Yeah. And I'm like, what was that an aid of? You know, why didn't you put your engine brake on for a bit? Or do you just like, you're like, I'm just going to let the truck do what it's going to do and not do anything to influence it whatsoever?
Yeah, then like, and then chances are you'll get halfway up inside of him then, and then there'll be a Waitrose wagging doing 40 mile an hour up the next hill, and then now you're boxed in and shafted.
I was able to pull away again, and I thought, there is absolutely no way I'm backing it off to let you in, because you'll make me overtake you slowly again. Eh? And I was like, yeah, that was a strange one. Then I had another one, it was one at BMs, and they're usually pretty quick. And he was doing 52 for a good while. And I was watching him, like, why is he going 52? That's weird. I don't get that, because he's usually quicker. And I thought, okay, I thought, to hell, but I'm going to overtake him. So I pulled out, and the lorry in front of him pulled into the services, and he's been in the adaptive cruise control and forgotten that his lorry's dropped to 52 mile an hour. So as soon as that's happened, he's been like, oh, and the lorry's shot back up to 56. So now I'm alongside him, cab to cab, and now we're going exactly the same speed. I think I was like maybe fractionally faster. And I was like, you're not going to make me sit here, are you? And I did. I sat there for about a minute. And then I think he realised again. He was like, oh, I've got a lorry beside me. So then he backed it off a bit and let me in. And I'm thinking, he must have had a long night shift or something, the poor guy. Because then he let me in, flashed me in, and everything like that. And I was like, yeah, that was a bit of a strange one. getting caught out in your adaptive cruise. So there was something else as well. Some curious incident. Who was it? What was it? There was somebody that was, oh yes, it was, who was it? One of my grows. At the bottom of the hill, is it junction 32 or 35? And maybe 35. You go past Carnforth and then you get to the steep hill as you go up the first climb. There's a series of climbs as you get towards Sharp. And he was in the middle lane overtaking a 450 Actros and an S500 Scania. And he's down to 45 mile an hour in the middle lane. And I don't know, even fully loaded, that Scania should be able to do better than 45. I don't know what was going on with it, but he sat beside this Actros doing 45 all the way up the hill with a whole line of other trucks, including me, sitting behind him. And then eventually he managed to get in front once it leveled off about again. And we all got past. And then I noticed I got a set distance away, sort of about 800 yards away in front of him. And it was, the distance stayed the same. So he was going about the same speed. And then we get down at Penrith at the moment. There's a 40 mile an hour set of average speed road marks. I don't know if you've seen that. They're like doing something, a railway bridge at the Penrith junction.
Yeah, seen that. It's like half a mile before you come off at 40.
Well, it's 40 mile an hour. Well, there's a width restriction in the outside lane, which is 2 metres wide. Your lorry's 2.5 metres wide, so lorries aren't supposed to be in the outside lane. And it's a bit annoying in the inside lane because the cars tend to drop down to like 35. But anyway, I was like sitting there, I'm like, trundling along. I looked in the mirror and I was like, really? Whoosh, right down the outside of everybody. In the outside lane, like cars in the inside lane, like moving over, right down the outside, like way over like 40 mile an hour, all the way down until I got caught up with the traffic in that lane. I'm like, yeah, you're not supposed to do that. There's cameras watching that lane as well. So I don't know if the cameras are watching for lorries being in the outside lane that shouldn't or not. But I thought that was a really strange one as well. I'm like, you would get 3 points and a £100 fine if the police saw you in that outside lane. And I thought, yeah, that's such a strange one. I say, I don't know how he was doing 45 mile an hour, unless he was grossing, unless he was stuck in economy mode and he doesn't know how to take it out economy mode. I don't know, but a 500 brake Scania is comfortably faster than a 450 horsepower Actros. We couldn't get past it. And then whoosh, right down the outside lane through the width restriction. And I was like, yeah, interesting that. Like somebody would grass you in for that. They would go and like send their dash camera footage in. You've got to be very wary, things like that. And then, yeah, eventually, I don't remember where he went after that, but I was like, yeah, curious driving. Anyway, out and about on the roads. Not that I'm saying that I'm perfect. I've probably done some right dick manoeuvres this week that have pissed people off. I don't know. But you do wonder.
Yeah, it's about a standard week, that is. And it's like, I'm going to piss somebody off today. I wonder whose turn it is. Usually when you're trying to come off a roundabout loaded.
Yeah. Oh, I had one as well. I had a really stinky skip, a wagon and drag skip lorry. God knows why it had in these skips, because it smelt like absolute death. Like it was vile, like rotting meat or something. And I was empty on the A50. So I came off the roundabout and then I saw him in the inside line. So I accelerated all the way up and I was just about all the way past him. And here it turns out we're going the same speed. So the A50 dual carriageway, really, really busy. So I was just in front of him and he just like holding me there. And there was a big queue of traffic behind him. So I was like, I'm not doing this. So I put my indicator on. And waited, and he just like sat there. So I had enough space because I had a flat trailer on, so I just eased over, and he just sat tailgating me, like sitting right behind me. And I was like, is he quicker than me? What's he going to do? So I was waiting for him to try and pull out, but he was fully loaded and I was empty. And I was like, surely you must realise how stinky your lorry is and how nobody would want to sit behind that. And then, eventually I got past another slow lorry And then he kind of got stuck behind and I left him behind there. But I was like, why do you leave lorries sitting out in the outside lane like that when it's nearly the same speed? Knock it back a bit. Let them pass. Let the traffic keep flowing. This is why people don't like lorry drivers. Hey.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, I get it. Like, if you come to a downhill, there's been a guy sat beside somebody. Like, if it's a downhill, I'll let it run slightly just to help me get by the guy and get back in. But then you get, you know, there's a guy at the side of him, but then he's like immediately on the exhaust brake coming down the hill. And it's like, do you want to sit at the side of him all day?
Yeah, yeah. Some people are scared. They think you're not allowed to go over 56 whatsoever. So the second it goes over, they're like, brr, 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 on with the exhaust brake or the engine brake or whatever, not wanting to go over it at all. I know that some companies don't want their drivers to have any overspeeds at all. But if you're on the motorway, you're allowed to have an overspeed to 60 mile an hour. Trucks are legally allowed to go 60. And that's part of driving efficiently, to let it freewheel for that extra distance. But some companies don't want their drivers doing that, and some drivers are scared of getting an overspeed. I don't know if they think they'll get like done for it if they get stopped or whatever.
I think it did come into where they can, if you get pulled at the side of the road, they can now legally prosecute for overspeeds. But I think that's like if they're horrendous overspeeds. Like, you know, if you got one for 10 seconds at 57 mile an hour, just think, oh, I let it ran to 60 loaded downhill and I didn't dial it back in time. It's like, yeah, you're fine. But then if you've got like seven in a day and they're both like above 65, 70 mile an hour, and it's like, yeah, right, me, come here, you, I want a word.
Yeah, I've got loads let it run at 60 all the time. And then the standard setting on the dash is to hold it back in 96 kilometers an hour. So I just let it do that. Pretty much and hold it back. Or on very rare occasions, I might let it go a bit more if I'm trying to get past somebody who's making me hug me out for like a 5 minute overtake. But, you know, is that so? Yeah, just to round this podcast off, where are you off to next week?
Nowhere currently. I've got the week booked off.
Well, hey! Is the lorry going to be out or is it going to be parked up?
Boss man's probably going to take it out for a couple of shifts just to keep the batteries charged. But yeah, for at our spot, if somebody's on holiday, it'll be like, you know, we won't put anyone like outside into it.
Yeah, I do. Well, that's what you want. That's a good thing. I know the lorries have got to work, and a lot of it's not, you know, viable to have them sitting around a lot of the time. But it's always nice. It's a desirable thing for a lot of drivers if your lorry is, you know, if it's a house to go out, it's like looked after and driven by like people who care. I feel really bad for guys in some fleets who, as soon as it's parked up, they'll just throw anybody in it. Agency guys a lot. And then you come back and, you know, somebody's been having a good rummage through everything and, you know, that, and like stuff's missing, you know, that. Yeah, yeah, never much fun.
I hated that at my old place. And like, you know, well, especially like, say, you know, it's like, you know, like, oh, you know, my bottle of glass cleaner's gone missing. It's like, oh, well, we can't prove who stole it. And it's like, well, I got out the lorry at midnight on Friday and I got back in it again at midnight Sunday, and there's only one man who's been in that lorry since. So you kind of can. You just don't want
to. Yeah. Right, exactly. I know a guy who, there was a guy who kept driving night shift in a particular lorry and stealing another driver's cans of Red Bull. And he would leave him money for it. But that's not the point, because then the guy doesn't have his can of Red Bull. So the driver who was having the can of Red Bull stolen said he went and got a can of Red Bull specifically and then rubbed it liberally in a part of his body and then put it back in the fridge to see for anybody to go and steal it. So, you know, if you're going to steal things out of fridges, be wary. You never know what's happened to them.
Yes. I've never had to get to that option before, but I have heard stories of people doing it, and then the person who has stolen the thing getting arsey with them. It's like, well, if you didn't steal it, you wouldn't be in this situation.
Exactly. Well, I know I'm starting Monday. I've got to go and tip steal, and then I'm off to Bridlington for a couple of drops. And yeah, I don't know. I'm quite enjoying the fact that I've got places to be and everything like that. And I say I'm out in the rocks off gravel, yellow Scania, the Highline one. There's two. There's the low roof one, which is Stevie, with a yellow fuel tank on it, and that mine's the full size cab one.
Yeah, you've got side skirts on yours as well, I noticed.
I've got side skirts on mine as well. Yeah, great lorry. Thoroughly enjoying driving it. Went and bought myself a little cordless Hoover out the range today for it as well, and a toolbox with some cheapy tools, a couple of shifters and screwdrivers and everything to keep it totally separate for the lorry. And I was going to get myself a set of spare Susies and a tyre inflation line to chuck in it as well, just to keep things in stock in case of any particular problems. Because yeah, it's nice to have the be able to totally rig the lorry out. I've not had that for like a long time. I've always been jumping between different lorries. So yeah, just in the process of getting it all set up inside, and yeah, fair enjoying driving it and everything. So if you see us on the road, give us a wave, guys. And thank you, Niall, for coming along and catching up with us. And look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Aye, no bother. It's been nice to chat.
Aye, deal. Right, guys. Catch us later. See you next time.
See you after.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tires. Fortune Tires and International Tires, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.